Ian was there, and he looks far more worse for wear than when I'd last seen him. He had multiple silver harpoons protruding from him that were secured by chains. No fewer than a dozen vampire guards held the other ends of those chains. The tips of the harpoons must have been hooks, because every time Ian moved, they ripped open large pieces of his flesh. The Simargle was there too, chained inside a metal cage. The Nordic vampire stood next to the cage. From the way he kept checking his watch, he was expecting company soon. Time to crash this party. I aimed for Ian's shoulder that I'd marked with my blood, and everything went black. Before I could see again, I caught snatches of conversation.
Where'd all those ashes come from? They're pouring out of his shoulder, look!
Now something's moving in them.
It's big. It's coming up out of the ashes. What is it? Holy shit, it looks like a woman.
I brushed my silvery golden blue hair out of my eyes, my gaze finding Ian. For a split second, I saw him through the otherness in me instead of my vampire nature. Lights burst from him, hallmarks of the integrity and inner nobility I already knew he had. But darkness also swirled around those lights, and it wasn't only from his brands. Ian had had inner demons long before he made his deal with Dagon. At that same moment, Ian looked at me. Recognition lit his face, making me glad I'd showed him this appearance before. I'd half expected him to be frightened when he realized I was the creature forming from the ashes near his feet. His captor certainly screamed as if gripped by terror, but elation washed over Ian's expression. Then he bent to yank me into his arms, despite the harpoons tearing bigger holes into his flesh. A spray of his blood hit me. Rage took over. They had hurt him. They had hurt him, and he'd let them because I told him to go with them. Now I would avenge every single drop of his blood. I let my hands grip his for the briefest moment. Then, naked except for the ashes clinging to me, I launched myself at Ian's captors. The good thing about having my former body explode is that it cured me of my hangover. This new body wasn't exhausted or filled with chemicals. That meant I was at full magical and physical capacity. I unleashed my powers like a fireworks finale on the 4th of July. Truth be told, I might have been showing off a little. Ian had really impressed me with his fighting skills. Now I was showing him what I could do. When I was finished, nothing in the garage moved except me, Ian, and the Simargle, who was doing circles in his cage in excitement. "Missed you too," I told him, making a mental note to give the Simargle a name as soon as possible. I pulled a coat off one of the dead guards. The coat was blood-stained, but it was black, so the blood didn't show as much on it. It would have to do until I could get some real clothes. I shook the worst of the gore off it before I put it on. Then I pushed my hair back, wishing I had a clip or hair tie. The long tricolored mass always seemed to swirl around my shoulders, as if blown by a hidden breeze when it was down. Finally, I used magic to blunt the forked edges of the harpoons embedded in Ian, so I could remove them without taking out more hunks of his flesh. When they were all out, Ian stared at the dismembered remains of the bodies, at the wreckage done to several cars in the garage, and then finally at me. His former elation was gone. Now the full weight of everything that had happened was in his gaze. "I told you I'd see you again," I said in a feeble attempt to lighten the tenseness of the situation.
"That you did."
He let out a short laugh.
"And then you exploded all over me."
A weird sense of shyness overtook me.
Then again, I had exposed myself in the most extreme way possible by doing that. So perhaps it wasn't so weird.
Still, I tried to deflect. It looked worse than it was. "You saw your shapeshifter friend temporarily die when she let herself get decapitated by the council's executioner."
"Stop,"
he said shortly.
"No more lies, half-truths, or omissions. At first, I thought you were a demon-possessed vampire, because you could do magic by your will alone, something no vampire can do. Then I tasted your blood and thought you were demon-branded, like me. Thought it was Dagon who'd branded you, and that's why you wanted him dead, but now, I have no idea what you are. You're right, I've seen demon-branded people die before. They don't spontaneously catch fire and explode. They also don't rise from a pile of ashes that somehow poured from the same spot where you marked me. And their eyes don't glow silver like yours did. So for the last time, what are you? I found myself wishing I was still drunk. It would be so much easier to admit to this next part if I had chemicals numbing my nervousness. You know about the vampire half. The other half. I gave a hapless shrug. Depending on the culture or beliefs, there are different names. Demigod, Nephilim, Phoenix, Titan, Hellspawn. Was one of your parents an angel, a demon, or a god? He interrupted. Only Tenok had ever known the truth about me, and he'd exhorted me countless times to tell no one. All those long-ago warnings rang in my head as I said. I once asked my father what he was because I couldn't figure it out. He never answered me, and he's not the type you press. You'll see what I mean. His gaze narrowed.
What do you mean, I'll see?
My swipe encompassed the corpses strewn around the garage. I couldn't come to you immediately, or you'd still be at the hotel with too many innocent people close by. I also couldn't wait too long, or they would have delivered you to Dagon. For that kind of precision, I had to make a suitably large offering. My father will be here soon to collect it. As if that had summoned him, half the garage suddenly turned into blackest darkness, and a ghostly boat sailed over a river that morphed out of nowhere. Ian screamed when he saw the figure at the boat's helm. His pale skin turning dead white. It's all right, I said quickly. He's not here for you, he's here for them. Ian's gaze swung back toward me with a mixture of horror and disbelief.
The bloody Grim Reaper is your father?
What you're seeing isn't what he really looks like. On this side of the veil, you see what you fear.
I see an enormous cloaked skeleton wielding a huge scythe, Ian said promptly. That's not what you see?
I looked at my father, seeing a tall man with silver, gold, and blue hair, strikingly beautiful features, and deep bronze skin. The warden's true form was so similar to my real appearance, I had to constantly wear the glamoured disguise of a slim blonde law guardian to avoid being recognized as his child. No, that's not what I see, I said, meeting my father's lightning-like gaze before I looked away. Then I gestured to Ian's former guards. Your offering, Warden. My father extended his hand, and ghostly visages rose up from the corpses before they were compelled into his boat. None went happily. They all screamed much the way Ian had when he saw my father. The only one who wasn't afraid was the Simargal. He pressed against the bars of his cage as much as his chains allowed, making noises that were similar to happy yips. My father looked at him and gave him the barest nod, the highest form of approval I'd ever seen from him.
You will care for him, he told me.
A command, not a request.
His prior owner treated him in an unworthy manner. I will inform him of the change.
I didn't mind the order. I'd already decided to do that anyway. But I was surprised by that last part. You know who his former owner is. For the second time, I was sure I'd amused my father, even though his expression didn't change.
Yes, it is Dagon, and he was just leaving.
Ian and I turned around at the same moment. I couldn't see my expression, but it was probably as shocked as Ian's. When I saw that Dagon had, at some point, materialized behind us. Chapter 24. I hadn't seen Dagon in over 4,000 years. The demon looked exactly the way I'd remembered. Tall, blonde, boyishly handsome, and with a little smirk that rarely faded no matter what atrocities he was inflicting. That smirk grew when he saw Ian, then dropped entirely when he looked at me. Damn it. I hadn't taken the time to reapply my glamour so Dagon would only see the Law Guardian appearance I'd been hiding under.
You? He said in astonishment. I thought by now you had to be dead.
I'd had countless dreams about what would happen when I finally faced Dagon again. The details varied, but they all ended with me stabbing Demonbone through his eyes to send him to the fate he so richly deserved. Now I was caught off guard and unprepared, but I couldn't let him see how rattled I was. You, of all people, should know how hard I am to kill. Hatred dripped from every syllable. Dagon's smirk returned when he heard it. I fought not to tremble from a mixture of blind rage and remembered despair. Time was supposed to lessen the intensity of all things, yet in that moment I hated and feared Dagon just as much as I had all those millennia ago, when I'd been nothing more than his favorite prop. He wagged a finger at me, in a playful way people did when they caught a child being naughty.
You must be the troublemaker who divested me of my latest soul acquisition. Very clever of you to mute the tether in Ian's brands. But now, it's time for me to take him back.
I moved in front of Ian before either he or Dagon had a chance to twitch. He's not going anywhere with you. Dagon's face darkened like a sky full of deadly weather.
Isn't he? You should remember what happens to people who upset me.
Is that a threat?
My father asked the question in the mildest tone. Dagon still stiffened as if he'd been slapped.
Of course not, my lord, he said,
laughing as if we'd all shared a joke.
That would violate our agreement. It would. So you may leave now.
The warden of the gateway to the Netherworlds replied. Again, it wasn't a suggestion. Dagon smiled at my father, but gave me and Ian a look that promised bloody vengeance. Then, he disappeared. My father didn't look at me, but I knew he would make sure Dagon didn't pop back up to murder us anytime soon. He might not care for me in the way that mortals cared for their children, but he wouldn't tolerate one of his commands being broken only hours after giving it. That I could count on. Of course, that command went both ways. Long ago, my father had commanded me never to kill Dagon. I fully intended to go back on that order. And Dagon might not try to kill me today, but he would absolutely start plotting my murder now that he knew I was still alive. When it came to our hatred of each other, neither of us was rational or obedient. My father didn't look at me when he left. He simply turned that boat full of screaming spectral passengers around and sailed back into the unfathomable darkness he'd appeared from. Then that darkness vanished, replaced by the blandness of the garage with the smashed cars and the bodies strewn around it. I went over to the Simargal's cage and broke it, then unwound him from all the chains around him. As soon as the Simargal was free, he started flying around me in happy circles. I'm going to call you Silver, I told him. Do you like that? An enthusiastic yip was my answer. Silver it was, then. I looked at Ian. He still hadn't moved except for his eyes. They raked over me, the body-filled room, and the area where my father had appeared and disappeared. His face was no longer as pale as fresh snow, but his jaw was set so tight I could hear the cartilage cracking from the strain. The silent tension grew until I couldn't stand it anymore. Don't worry, I don't expect you to be okay with this. The vampire race defaults to rejecting people who are a combination of different species. I let out a sharp laugh. I should know. I've tried and failed to stop the hostilities that have boiled over between vampires and ghouls when abominations like me are discovered. Ian might have been against Katie's execution, but there was a world of difference between not wanting your friend's child to be murdered and continuing to partner with someone who was half vampire and half of a species that couldn't easily be named. Worse, my powers were everything vampires and ghouls feared when they talked about the perils of mixing different species together. It's fine, I went on. All I ask is that you don't reveal what you know about me to anyone else. Tenok would have killed him to ensure his silence. Once I would have too. At some point during the short amount of time we'd spent together, I'd started to care for Ian. That was supremely stupid of me, but it was still true. We'll go our separate ways, I continued more briskly. Dagon still can't find you with your brands muted, so you'll be fine if you keep yourself hidden. I still intend to take him down, so you'll really be fine once he's dead. If I kill him, the pessimistic part of me added. But I didn't say it out loud because I was trying to sound confident.
I was also trying not to show how much it would hurt when Ian turned around and walked away. But Tenok had long prepared me for people being unable to accept what I was. Watching millions slaughter each other over far fewer differences during the thousands of years of my life had proved Tenok correct. I was so sure of Ian's rejection, it took a moment for me to register what he was saying.
Don't know about you, but I'm starving. Feels like I haven't had a decent meal in days.
What? His reaction to this momentous revelation couldn't be something as simple as hunger. He also pulled a coat from a dead guard, shook it so the worst of the gore flew off, and put it on. Then he walked over and gave me a light whack on the ass.
Half-deaf as well as half-demigod, hmm? What, your ears didn't fully regenerate along with the rest of you? I'll say it louder, then. Follow me. I'm peckish, and I know the perfect place where we can indulge in a feeding splurge.
Chapter 25. I did a warding spell on the Simargle so that Dagon wouldn't be able to track him from his blood anymore. Thank you, Nordic Vampire, for spilling that important detail. Then I covered his cage with another dead guard's coat, so his wings didn't attract stares when we went outside. Several blocks later, Ian banged on a side door labeled Crimson Fountain Employee Entrance. The door opened, and a young woman with purple hair and dark eye makeup appeared.
Job interviews don't start for another hour, she began, then stopped when she got a good look at Ian. But you can wait inside, she added,
her scent changing until lust covered the heavy chemical tang from her perfume.
Grand, he said, walking into the building.
I followed, which made the corner of her mouth curl down in disappointment. Then Ian's gaze captured hers and his eyes turned green.
Gather together the rest of the employees and bring them here.
She turned around without another word. Minutes later, about half a dozen people shuffled into the narrow hallway.
Is this everyone?
Ian asked the purple-haired girl.
So far, she said. More'll show up after 6 when the main shift starts.
Bring them to me as soon as they come in. As for the rest of you.
His bright green gaze landed on each until they were all under his thrall.
You don't see me, this woman, or our creature until we tell you that you do. You don't hear us either. Now go about your business as usual.
They turned and walked away, some wondering out loud why Dahlia had asked them to come see an empty hallway.
Cancel the interviews for today,
Ian told Dahlia next.
But before you do that, show us the VIP section and turn the music on. It's quiet as a tomb in here.
She nodded, and we followed her through what was obviously a club. I was surprised to see wooden coffins set up around the stage. Then I noticed large glass fangs over the bar, mock headstones making up the backs of chairs, and stakes for some of the beer taps. And understood. Now the cheesy name for the establishment made sense.
You brought us to a fake vampire bar?
Ian set Silver's cage down beside the bar, then threw a grin at me.
The owner and I are friendly, though he thinks I'm another poser instead of a real vampire. Doesn't know a bit about the undead world either, poor fellow. That's why Dagon would never think to look for us here.
He was right. I'd expected us to either flee the city or run to an ally's house, not go to a club that was a bad stereotype for everything humans normally thought of when they heard the word vampire.
Think it's safe to let him out? Or will he eat the staff?
Ian asked, tracing the bars on Silver's cage. Simargles are vegetarian, I replied, offended on Silver's behalf.
Bring in whatever veggies you've got,
he told Dahlia when she came back after turning the music on. She turned the house lights down and the club lights on. Now the club was mostly dark, except for multicolored beams that crisscrossed over the empty dance floor and the occasional fog or strobe effect.
VIP section's over here, Dahlia said, walking up a flight of stairs.
After I petted Silver and told him to stay, I followed Dahlia to the second floor. In the far corner, ropes and curtains cordoned a room with long black couches, its own bar, and a great view of the dance floor, if you kept the curtains open. Ian didn't.
He closed them and took his coat off before lounging on the nearest couch. Dahlia's gaze swept over Ian's bare upper body, as if he'd compelled her to memorize every detail of how his creamy skin stretched over muscles that rippled with his slightest movement. When she licked her lips, I found myself bristling with what could only be jealousy. Ridiculous. I'd promised Ian an orgy on my dime as soon as this was over. How could I be resentful of someone merely looking at him? But I was. So much that my scent soured, until I might as well have sprayed myself down with a bottle labeled Jealous Bitch. Ian's gaze touched mine. I quickly glanced away. He couldn't know about my latest irrational flash of possessiveness. By the gods, I still needed to have some secrets from him. She's obviously into you, so you should start your feeding splurge with her, I said, trying to prove I didn't care about anything that might happen between the two of them. Ian's mouth curled into a slow grin. Great. He'd probably sensed my possessiveness and was amused by it. You're being a fool, I told myself sternly. It didn't matter. After everything that had happened, I was out of the reserves I normally drew from to hide what I was feeling. But I didn't have to stand here and be mocked for it. I spun around. I'm going to check on Silver.
Wait.
It wasn't the command in Ian's tone that stopped me. It was the dangerous amount of intensity in his gaze when I turned back around. We stared at each other. An electric jolt went through me when his smile faded, and naked hunger overtook his expression.
Come back here, Veritas.
The new throatiness in his voice beckoned me more than his words. Once again, the smart move would be to walk away. Instead, I found myself walking toward them, as if I'd been hypnotically compelled.
I didn't even have Red Dragon to blame my actions on anymore.
His gaze filled with green. I didn't need to see my eyes to know that mine had probably started glowing green too. An unbearable need swept over me, drowning out everything else. Yes, I should turn around and leave, but I didn't want to.
Go,
Ian told Dahlia, the vibration in his voice telling me he used his power on her.
Close the drapes behind you. Don't come back or even think about us, until I summon you.
Dahlia left at once. Seeing her go gave me a brief moment of sanity. I started to follow her, but Ian got up and grabbed me. I stared at the pale hands gripping my arms instead of at him. What do you think you're doing? I asked in a low voice.
This.
I gasped when he yanked me down onto the couch. All my nerve endings jumped at the feel of his hard body on top of mine. I considered saying what a bad idea this was, but discarded that when his mouth covered mine. His mouth was firm, but his lips were satin, and his kiss dared me to deny the heat blasting through me. I lost that dare, parting my lips without hesitation. He deepened the kiss, tongue twining with mine until lust made me dizzy. His taste, his scent, the way his hands moved in my hair, the sound he made when he sucked on my tongue. I was melting and burning at the same time. Then I arched against him when he caught my lower lip with his fangs, lightly piercing it. The nip flavored our kiss with the tang of my blood. I scored his lip with my fangs, moaning when I tasted his blood. Ambrosia couldn't compare. I scored his tongue next, then sucked on it. His kiss became even more erotic. That deep inner ache began to throb, and my control evaporated. Too much so. I knew I'd gone too far when he shifted, and I glimpsed his back over his wide shoulders. It was streaked with crimson, and my hands were also red. At some point, I must have ripped bloody tracks into his skin. Sorry, I said, snatching my hands away.
I'm not.
He grabbed my hands and put them on his back again.
I want more.
He ripped my coat open. I was naked beneath it, and his gaze went molten as it raked over me.
Stunning, he rasped. Can scarcely believe you're real.
Oh, I was real. And I needed him to never stop kissing me. I pulled his head down and his mouth once again slanted over mine. Then I groaned when my bare chest touched his.
His muscles were so hard, so taut. But his skin. Silkeb never felt this luxuriant. I rubbed against him to feel more. Then his hands began to move over me. Everything that had ached now felt like it was burning beneath his touch. I felt more volatile than I had right before I'd exploded. Soon I was making incoherent noises against his mouth. He slid between my open legs, then twisted his hips so the bulge in his jeans rubbed me where I throbbed the most. Each sinuous stroke had me arching against him, until I was gripping him with my thighs as tightly as I held him with my arms. I needed to have him inside me. I couldn't wait. There was only one thing in my way. The damn jeans he still wore. He let out a growling chuckle when I tore at the front of them until dark fabric flew in every direction. Then he sat up and caught my hands.
No,
he said, the single word stunning me.
Not until you stop holding back.
What? I'm not holding back, I began, only to have him fling me against the couch with such force, it sent me and the sofa sliding across the room. He stalked over when the wall finally stopped the couch.
Liar, the only time you weren't was when you tore my back up.
With each step, his voice deepened.
But after you apologized for that, you haven't drawn my blood since. I won't tolerate your half response. I want all of it. And if you keep holding back...
He leaned over, denying me the kiss I sought in favor of nearly yanking my legs open.
I'm going to torture you with pleasure until I break your control.
Chapter 26. A wild thrill ran through me that at once became muted with caution. I can't. I'd hurt you.
Good,
he said with a dark laugh.
Looking forward to it.
I took in a breath to argue. It exploded out of me as his mouth descended between my legs. He didn't tease me with ever-deepening flicks of his tongue the way he had when we first kissed. He devoured my flesh with the same abandon he'd demanded I give to him. My loins clenched with band after band of unbelievable pleasure. I gripped his shoulders as my gasps turned into loud cries.
Let go,
I heard him mutter against my flesh.
Give me all of you.
His tongue had to be made of fire. Only that could explain the way it seared me. I didn't remember falling to the floor, but I must have, because wood replaced the soft leather of the couch. Splinters stabbed my fingers from how hard I dug my nails into it. I didn't register the pain. Not when a new series of deep swirls yanked my back off the floor. Cries kept spilling out of me. So loud they would have sent the club's employees running if Ian hadn't mesmerized them into neither hearing nor seeing us. Then another series of strokes brought a new rush of ecstasy with the suddenness of a ripcord being pulled. The release I needed was right there. He tore his mouth away, denying me the orgasm I'd been moments from.
No, not until you truly let go.
Frustration made my hand whip out faster than I could think. Then I stared in horror at the bright imprint on his cheek. I am so sorry. He blew on my swollen, aching flesh, and the instant clench of pleasure stole my voice.
The slap is better, but still not enough.
He chuckled before another teasing breath brushed my clitoris like a cluster of feathers. The pleasure only heightened my need, as did the barest flick of his tongue next. My hands went to his head to urge him back down for more. He caught them, holding them against my stomach.
Not until you unleash all you've been holding back. Until then... enjoy the torture.
Low, wicked laugh.
I know I will.
He kept bringing me to the edge, only to yank me back as if he were the orgasm whisperer and knew exactly when to stop. It wasn't long before I considered using magic to make him cease the exquisite torment. At the same time, a darker part of me wanted to let go the way he urged.
The repeated whiplash from passion to denial shredded through the last layers of my control. I was no longer concerned with going too far or hurting him. I couldn't think beyond the need. I barely registered Ian's growl of approval when the chains broke on the deepest parts of me. Suddenly, I had more than enough strength to yank free from his grasp. I flung Ian off me hard enough to send him smashing into the wall on the other side of the room. Concrete and plaster burst from the impact his body made, and I didn't care. I lunged toward him, almost feral in my need to have him. He was faster, meeting me in the middle of the room. He grabbed me before slamming both of us against the nearest wall. Another cloud of concrete, dust, and debris burst into the air. Then his mouth crushed mine as he yanked my thigh up to his waist. A rough thrust sheathed his full length inside me. My sharp cry mixed with his hoarse shout. His grip became tight enough to hurt, if I could feel anything aside from the rapturous burn inside. He began to move, and pleasure ripped through me like never before. His size, my hypersensitivity to the silver in his piercing, the added friction from it, the thrusts that matched my overwhelming need with blistering ecstasy. Each withdrawal had me sobbing with denial, and each thrust had me crying out for more. I needed all of him. Everything. Now. Blood flavored our kiss. I didn't know if it was mine or his. Didn't know which of us had taken the other to the ground, either. All I knew was the ferocious pleasure from those hard, deep thrusts that had me tearing at his back in encouragement. He gripped my hips, moving even faster. My climax roared near, leaving me almost rabid. He couldn't deny me this again. He couldn't. I wouldn't let him. I flipped us over until I was on top of him. Then I gripped his hips so hard, my fingers stabbed right through his skin. I didn't care. I gave myself up to an orgasm that tore through me with the intensity of a killing blow, bowing my back and causing me to scream loud enough to hurt my ears. Afterward, I slumped over his chest, as limply as if I'd been stabbed in the heart with silver. Several moments later, he pushed my hair aside to kiss the exposed curve of my throat.
Lucifer's hammering hard on. Now that was a real shag.
His voice broke through my near-paralyzing afterglow. I looked down at him and gasped. His body was covered in red streaks that could only be blood trails from my nails. But that wasn't what had made me suck in a stunned breath. It was the floor. It hadn't just dented beneath the full frenzy of our passion. In some places, I could actually see all the way through to the dance floor below. "I am so," I began, only to have his laughter cut me off.
"If you're about to apologize again, stop. Only a fool would think I'd change anything. And you are no fool."
That was debatable. But now wasn't the time. I started to get off him so he wasn't in danger of falling through if the wrong support beam snapped, but his hands landed on my waist.
"What do you think you're doing?"
I gestured at the obvious. "Getting us out of a hole."
"Allow me,"
he said, his hands tightening on my hips while he used his power to fly us straight up. Then he flicked in mid-air until I was staring up at him instead of down. He was still inside me, still hard, and my eyes widened as those aerial tricks caused new thrusts that didn't feel accidental. "Didn't you finish?" I thought so, but to say I'd been preoccupied would be an understatement. His grin was accompanied by a twist of his hips that was absolutely no accident.
"Do you mean, did I come?" "Yes. But I'm not nearly finished, little guardian. Right now, I intend to lose all my control with you. So, as you said, during our first fight..."
A deep thrust bent my spine with bliss.
"My turn."
He'd been restraining himself?
Then I couldn't wait to find out what he'd be like now. In that case, like you told me back then, come and get me.
Hours later, Ian came into the VIP room, dropping the drape that served as his only clothing.
Club is closed for the night. The lost employee went home. The police are gone, and the restoration company won't return until tomorrow.
Good, I said, glad that I was incapable of blushing. Ian had mesmerized the employees into neither seeing nor hearing us, but that hadn't stopped them from attempting to investigate why the club's walls, floors, and furnishings were being destroyed in the VIP section. They'd even called the police and the construction restoration company in an attempt to mitigate the damage. I might have been willing to ignore a few oblivious employees during the height of our passion, but a few employees, an emergency restoration services crew, and a few police officers, no. Ian had dealt with all of that, after bringing me to the most incredible orgasm of my life. I could have helped him erase memories and herd our audience out, except I'd been too busy reeling from the after effect. Now the club was empty of everyone except him, me, and Silver, who was currently perched on one of the club's ceiling beams. I tried not to wonder how long the Simargle had been there. It was embarrassing enough to realize that, for a time, I'd ignored an audience of people, without adding my new pet to that voyeuristic mix. I was now lying on two of the remaining unbroken couches. I'd pushed them together until they formed a serviceable, if narrow, bed. My covers were more of the room's drapes. The deep red fabric rustled as Ian finally joined me. His light kiss on the top of my head shouldn't have made me feel warmer, but it did, as did the arm he slipped around me to pull me closer. What time is it? I didn't really care, but the question was a buffer from the very unfamiliar feeling swirling inside me. I couldn't decide which was more disconcerting. The thought that he'd goaded me into briefly having sex in front of several strangers, or the thought of how much I hadn't cared at the time. Was I actually an exhibitionist beneath all my hard-won control? Or was his command of my body and emotions so strong? He'd made me one despite myself.
A little after midnight,
he replied, shifting until he faced me. I found that I wasn't ready to look him in the eye. So I promptly closed mine, as if I were tired. I must not have been convincing, since his chest began to vibrate from laughter.
Shields up at full force, I see.
I don't know what you mean, I said, opening my eyes because I had no other choice now. His fingers traced my collarbone.
Your whole life, you've hidden what you are, right down to the silver glow in your eyes. And the waif-like appearance you glamour yourself with. Yes, I realized this was your true appearance when you rose from the ashes wearing it. So in a very short period of time, you've revealed your true looks, your real scent, your lineage, your powers, and now your passion. You're feeling exposed, so it's understandable that you're trying to emotionally cover up again.
I flinched at his dead-on accuracy. With a sardonic smile, he turned me into spooning position, and then pulled me back against his chest. Now his too knowing gaze was out of view.
Better?
I didn't respond, even if an inner knot of tenseness did ease. Yes, not having to look at him helped, but it didn't compare with everything else. He was right. I felt supremely exposed. If I wasn't so physically sated, I might have even gotten up and gone for a walk in an attempt to regroup. He sighed as if he could feel my continuing struggle.
Would it help if I told you one of my deep, dark secrets?
Yes, I said at once. I knew so little about him, and here he knew more about me than anyone had in centuries. His laughter tickled the back of my neck.
Very well. Here is something only Menkerys knows about me. My real name isn't Ian.
Chapter 27. That shocked me into sitting up. What? Had absolutely nothing been right in his dossier?
It's true. Not even my best mates know it. They met me as Ian when we were convicts on our way to the New South Wales penal colonies.
I was too seasick to tell them that wasn't my real name. Would have died from dehydration on that voyage, too, had Crispin not shared his meager food and water with me. Then browbeat Charles and Timothy into doing the same.
So that's why you hate boats, I murmured, remembering his comment at the private airport back in Poland.
Oh, indeed. No one celebrated the invention of flight more than me. With planes available for intercontinental travel, I never had to set foot on a heaving ship again.
I had already told him too much, but for some reason I revealed something else. I'm afraid of fire, I confessed. That's why I felt the same about the invention of electricity. But if your name isn't Ian, why did everyone think it was? A pensive tone entered his voice.
In 1788 London, Ian Maynard murdered a prostitute and was sentenced to 20 years hard labor in the Australian penal colonies. But Ian never set foot on the Alexander. I was switched for him the night before the prisoners were shipped out.
Why? And how did they get away with such a switch?
Greed.
His tone was nonchalant, but his scent soured.
Ian's father bribed the guards to ensure my protestations fell on deaf ears. Can't blame them. The guards' choices were facing a rich man's wrath for speaking out, or pocketing a goodly sum for staying quiet. They made the wise choice.
You're very forgiving, I said, feeling all the anger he didn't over the greedy guards' actions.
They didn't betray me.
Steele edged his voice now.
I reserve my anger for the ones who did. I didn't accidentally end up at the prison the night of the switch. I was led there under false pretenses. You see, my father was also Ian's father. But Viscount Maynard only considered Ian worthy of saving since he was his legitimate heir. I was merely the regrettable result of a dalliance between him and his former scullery maid. Still, we were nearly the same age, and we looked similar enough. So Viscount Maynard knew he could get away with the switch.
I closed my eyes. Such cruel class distinctions had faded in recent centuries, but I well remembered when they had meant the difference between life and death. I am sorry. That was unforgivable of him.
I thought so too, he said dryly. Especially when he convinced my mother to go along with it.
At my sharp intake of breath, he added,
Her initial betrayal was at least understandable. My father threatened to turn her and her new husband out into the street. They were his tenants, so he had the power to evict them. And it was winter. If the cold didn't kill them, starvation would. And she was pregnant to boot.
What a monster, I said with hatred. One of the true joys of my job was serving justice to people like Viscount Maynard.
Yes, which was why my ma stayed quiet.
He paused for a moment. When he spoke again, his tone was rougher.
What I didn't find out until much later was that after the switch she couldn't bear it and told the magistrate. My father dismissed it as the ravings of a madwoman, and spent more money silencing anyone who might believe her. Then he evicted them, as promised. She died from pneumonia before the babe was born. I didn't know, of course. I was shipped away by then. For nearly 2 decades, I hated her for her betrayal. And that whole time she was dead because she tried to save me.
I closed my eyes. Few things were as crushing as the weight of a loved one's death. That weight was only made heavier when compounded by guilt. I'd ripped myself to pieces, wondering if there was anything I could have done to pull Tannock back from the darkness that caused him to take his own life. From the pain in Ian's tone and the way his body braced as if absorbing invisible blows, he was still punishing himself over his mother's death and his mistaken hatred of her. It wasn't your fault. Those words had been said to me many times about Tannock. I hadn't believed them, but I'd still needed to hear them. Maybe Ian did now, too. A scoff left him.
I didn't throw her out to die, but I did almost everything else. I should have been the one screaming about the switch all the way from the jailhouse to the penal colonies. But my father told me no one would believe me, and I was cowed by his position, the guards in his pocket, and the belief that I, a commoner, couldn't triumph over my betters, as the gentry was seen back then. So I stayed quiet.
You might not have been able to win, I said gently. Courts favored the rich and powerful then. They still did, far too much. Plus, your father was a ruthless man. He probably would have had you silenced if you'd spoken out.
What did playing it safe and deferring to those in authority get me?
He countered sharply.
A murder sentence, a hellish imprisonment, and a dead mum I'd hated before I found out that she'd been far braver than I.
So many things about him made sense now. I'd wondered how someone so loyal and honorable at his core could also be such a hell-raising, law-breaking, manipulating bastard. Now I knew. Ian had molded himself into the exact opposite of the man he'd been back then, because he blamed that man for his imprisonment and his mother's death. Was that also why Ian would die for his friends, but he continually kept them at arm's length? Did he not believe that he deserved their love too? I wasn't going to push by asking. When someone showed you their scars, you didn't poke at them to see which one hurt the most. Tell me your father paid for what he did, I said instead. Tell me he died violently and painfully. He let out an appreciative sound at the vehemence in my tone.
2 decades later, when I returned to London, I interrogated him to find out the rest of what happened. Then I tore his throat out.
Good. What about your brother? He sighed.
I didn't have to kill him. Oh, I wanted to, since he was thrilled about the jailhouse switch, despite our being friendly, for a bastard and an heir. But Ian's brush with the law and our father, shipping him to relatives in France, wasn't enough to curb his sadistic ways. Eventually, he murdered the wrong prostitute and was killed by her lover.
Justice served, I thought, but kept that to myself too. After you escaped the penal colony, you decided to keep the name that had been forced on you. Why? He was silent for so long, I was about to withdraw the question. But then he said,
I suppose for the same reason my mate Charles calls himself Spade, the tool he was assigned back then. Some things you never want to forget, lest you lose the lesson learned with them. My lesson was realizing who I was. Thought I knew when times were easy, but it's who you are when things are at their worst that's the real truth. It's why I enjoy pain, in point of fact. You either feel it or you don't. No lies, no broken trust, and no self-delusion. Back then I thought I wasn't a murderer like my brother. Turns out I was. When I accepted that, I kept Ian's name as a reminder.
Who did you murder? I asked softly. I felt him rest his head on his arm. I wanted to turn around, but I stayed facing the other way. Maybe he needed the illusion of privacy now the way I had before.
The prison colony overseer. He fancied me, and he was a nasty sod who didn't bother about my failing to return his interest. After the 3rd or 4th rape?
His shoulder lifted in a shrug, as if the number no longer mattered to him.
I decided to kill him. Knew I'd hang for it, but I didn't care. One night I lured him outside the camp under the guise of wanting his attentions. Then I slit his throat and ran. Thought the other guards would catch me. But when days passed and they didn't, I knew I'd gotten away. Then I knew it didn't matter. I was going to die anyway. You've heard the rest of the story.
Yes. Menkerys had found him, and Ian's boundless loyalty to his sire had been born. Thank you for answering my question, I said in a steady voice. But I disagree with your reason for keeping your brother's name. You weren't a murderer like he was. You were an avenger of wrongs. If I were the one choosing your name back then, I would have picked Aequitas.
The Latin concept for justice. I felt him laugh. Then I felt the brush of his lips on my back.
Sometimes, little guardian, you are truly adorable. I am as far from just as a person can be. I would have only agreed to that if I were being ironic.
Like me calling myself the Latin word for truth, when everything about me is a lie, I noted. His laugh was lower now.
Yes, and I take my hat off to you. I thought I was a rebel, but you are the very definition of the word.
You're not wearing a hat, I muttered.
No, I'm not,
he said, punctuating his points by pulling up the fold of drapery between us. I closed my eyes when I felt his bare, luscious body against mine. Only minutes ago, I'd been more than sated, but now hunger rose as if I'd been long denied. Why wouldn't I have known that sex with him would be addictive? He didn't have an endless stream of women and men chasing after him for no reason. But I couldn't afford to crave him this way. That was almost as dangerous as our perilous circumstances. He hadn't only found an entry into my deepest secret. I was afraid he'd also cracked a door into my heart. What's your real name? I asked, hoping his rejection of the bald question would put brakes on my emotions. I felt him stiffen in all the wrong ways. I thought my deflection worked and he was about to leave. Then he said,
I'll tell you on the condition that you never call me by it. I chose to keep the name Ian long ago, and Ian I'll remain.
Agreed, I said, curiosity getting the better of me.
Killian.
He said it with a touch of bemusement, as if he'd forgotten what it felt like for that name to cross his lips.
The name I was born with was Killian.
I absolutely should not tell him this next part.
Should not, should not.
Oh, screw it. The name Tenok gave me was Ariel. He picked it because that was the name of the town he rescued me from. I let out a small laugh. Now everyone who hears Ariel thinks of a fictional mermaid. Even if I hadn't been forced to change my name for secrecy long ago, I still would have changed it because of that.
Tenok gave it to you. You don't remember the name you were born with.
I closed my eyes and saw only fire, the earliest memory I had. No, I was too young when Dagon's people burned my village. When I rose from the ashes, they took me to their master, and Dagon only ever called me girl. I'd long wondered if the reason I burst into flames and turned into ashes every time I died was because that's what had happened the first time. Or maybe it's what would happen to anyone with my lineage. I didn't know. I was the only one of my kind, to the best of my knowledge. Now the hands that settled on me were comforting instead of sensual.
That must be why you're so determined to see Dagon dead.
My laugh was bitter. It's not, actually. I wouldn't risk the thousands of new years I could live by going on a probable suicide quest just to avenge myself. His pause sounded surprised.
If not yourself, then who are you trying to avenge?
The thousands of people whose screams still echo in my ears. But if I told Ian that, I'd have to tell him the rest, and I couldn't. The memories hurt too much. Why am I telling you any of this? I wondered out loud. I don't know what it is about you that's gotten me to tell you secrets only Tenok has known. I didn't even tell Shun Chong what I really was. And she's been my closest friend and occasional lover for centuries. His snort rustled my hair.
You might have known Shun Chong longer than I've been alive, but she's not a true friend. If she was, she wouldn't have made you prove your claim about me. She would have let it go. People who value the law above all else might be admirable, but they make terrible confidants. If your other friends and former lovers are like her, it's little wonder you shared your secrets with me. Circumstances might have forced you to reveal some of them, but you told me the rest because you know I need you, so you know I won't betray you. And since I'm a scoundrel who's done far worse, you also know I won't judge you.
You're far less scoundrel than you claim. In fact, I'm going to have to rewrite your entire dossier once this is over. He chuckled,
Don't you dare.
I've worked very hard to build my terrible, sleazy reputation.
Then his laughter faded, and his tone turned serious.
There's another reason, of course. The very real possibility that both of us will be dead soon. That's why you're sharing some of your most closely guarded secrets. Same reason I shared some of mine with you. When time is short, anything less than honesty feels like a waste of effort.
How true that was, too.
I still would like to know why you're risking your life to kill Dagon,
he said, his tone softer now.
But if you don't want to tell me, or if you simply can't, I understand.
Part of me did want to tell him, surprisingly. He must be right. After Tenok died, I'd lost the only person who'd known everything about me, and had accepted me anyway. I hadn't realized how lonely I'd been, until I'd found someone else I could share my secrets with. And yes, time might be short indeed. So clinging to my secrets might be the very definition of wasted effort. But I also couldn't bear to relive the most horrifying aspects of my past. Not now. I needed to keep them buried. Dangerous though Ian was to my heart, I knew he could wipe the past and everything else from my mind. I don't want to talk anymore, I said, turning around and pressing my mouth to his. He responded at once, as if he knew how desperate I was to escape the memories that chased me. Soon, his mouth, hands, and body claimed my complete attention. This time, I didn't need any prompting to release all my control. He'd already proved that he could take everything I had, and I gave it without restraint. As for the club, well, that turned out to be more fragile. Still, that's what insurance was for, right? In case it didn't cover all the damage, I'd arrange for a check to be sent to the owners later. It would be the best money I'd ever spent. Chapter 28. We left the club at dawn. As a vampire, that was my least favorite hour to travel. Yet, at the moment, it was also the safest. With the sun out, we didn't have to worry about Dagon sneaking up on us if he decided to ignore my father's warning so soon. And the bright rays of light now elicited a smile from me instead of how I'd recoiled from them yesterday. What a difference a lack of hangover made. And lots of sex. I dressed in clothes I'd found in the club's Lost and Found. They didn't match, but it hardly mattered. Ian was wearing a police uniform. I doubted he'd found that in Lost and Found, so I'd surmised that one of the officers who'd showed up at the club last night must have left wearing a lot less than he'd arrived with. I could only imagine the story Ian would have implanted in his head, to explain the lack of clothes, too. Silver walked by our side, leashed as if he were any other pet. I'd glamored him so his wings and feathers were invisible. Now he only looked like a smaller version of a gray Samoyed. I'd glamored myself, too, using the appearance I normally wore. The waif, to hear Ian describe it. Yes, it was less beautiful and curvy than my true form. But Tenok had given me this appearance, using his biological daughter for the template. I'd kept my skin color, but I still considered wearing his daughter's face and form one of the highest honors of my life. Tenok had loved her so much, he'd remembered every detail of her, even thousands of years after her death. He'd shared his beloved memory with me to help conceal me from Dagon, my former captors, and the rest of Dagon's followers. Even before he'd made me a vampire, Tenok had treated me as if I were family.
Bloody hell!
Ian's curse turned my head around. He held the new mobile he'd somehow acquired to his ear. His lips were compressed into a thin line as he listened.
I couldn't make out the words, but I thought I recognized Menkeres' voice. It sounded as if Ian were listening to a recorded message.
Then Ian suddenly hurled his phone to the ground so hard, it shattered. What's wrong? Had Dagon done something horrible to one of Ian's friends? That would be just like him.
Shun Chong,
Ian snarled. I blinked.
What about her? She wouldn't hurt anyone.
Ian stomped on the remains of his phone as if he hadn't already destroyed it enough.
The jealous bitch voiced so much dismay over our supposed marriage, word of it reached Menkeres.
Now he's demanding to know what the devil is going on. And if I ignore him, we'll have two people hunting us.
I knew countless words in hundreds of languages, but oh, fuck, was what flew out of my mouth. Ian gave me a frustrated look.
Exactly.
Then he muttered another string of curses, ending with,
"Then Kerry's will tell Crispin, then Crispin will tell Cat, and Cat will tell everyone. Might as well stop."